Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
On today's episode of Inside Boxing Live, we recap Nioa Inoue's historic win over Paul Butler. We debate his place among the elites. Terrence Crawford's gloves exploded. We'll talk about that. Some fights have been announced. We have a top five list, and we preview a really good fight this weekend over on Showtime. Michel Rivera versus Frank Martin. Let's go. Hello, everybody. Welcome into another edition of Inside Boxing Live. This is a product of John Boy Media. I am Dan Canobio. My co-host is Chris Algieri, our producer, as always, in the corner, Ronnie Jerez. And we are ready to talk some boxeo. Chris, how are you, my friend? We're looking forward to a pretty good weekend of fights. We have a lot of boxing news today. Argentina won their semifinal match. They're in the final Sunday. You're a happy man.
Yeah, very happy, man. Watched the fight, the game very intently yesterday, but lot to celebrate for the Argentine fans.
If fans do not know, is that you are half Argentinian. Like, your mother was born in Argentina, correct?
Yep. Yeah, my mother was born in Argentina. She moved here when she was about 13 years old. And it's the reason I box. That's my grandfather. My Argentinian grandfather is the first person ever introduced me to any sports, and the first sport he introduced me to was boxing.
Wow. And also, this is Messi's World Cup, is what I've heard.
Man, it's his last chance. It's the only thing, the only title, the only recognition that he has not achieved yet. He's going to go down as the GOAT if he gets this world title, without question.
All right, let's get into it, Chris. This past Tuesday morning, 6 a.m. It was actually earlier than 6 a.m. I set my alarm for 6. I woke up right before the ring walks. Nioa Inoue, Paul Butler, not much of a fight. Butler landed 4 punches per round. He was a human punching bag. He didn't throw anything. He did not want to get sparked out of there, but he did get stopped in the 11th round. Inoue finishes his 118 career as undisputed. First undisputed fighter to come out of Japan. First undisputed bantamweight champion ever. More accolades for what should be the pound-for-pound number one fighter in the world. What was your takeaway from Inoue's beatdown of Butler?
You know, we spoke about this on a previous pod. I expected him to get starched in under 2 rounds. And, you know, Butler did not give himself a lot of opportunities. It's hard to knock out a guy who's not trying to win, you know, besides not trying to get knocked out. He wasn't even trying to win. He wasn't throwing punches back. Hard for Inoue to find the holes, but he still did use a concerted body attack, which was very impressive. Big power with both hands, was punching through the gloves of Butler. I really like that overhand right that he was throwing, which set up the left hooks to the liver. And eventually just wore him down. You know, Butler was so close to the finish line, but just couldn't deal with the power and the two-fisted attack of Inoue. Very impressive performance. And not only, you know, that it could be a stinker with a fight like that, right? Inoue didn't allow that. He had fun at one point, putting his hands behind his back, moving his head, doing things we're not used to seeing him do, throwing combinations whenever Butler was pinned against the ropes. So all in all, fantastic performance of Inoue.
Like, on one side, I wanted to see a spectacular knockout. I was like, wait, why isn't Butler, you know, throwing punches? Why isn't he engaging? But on the other hand, it's like, all right, we get to watch Inoue box for 11 rounds, which is something we haven't seen in quite a while, maybe going back to that first Donaire fight. But before we get into more Inoue, with Butler, I think a lot of fans were upset with his style. The ESPN broadcasters were openly, you know, it was Bradley and Tessitore, like pretty pissed because he didn't engage. And he went in there not to win, simply to survive. You stepped into the ring with a lot of fighters that had more power than you, but that never stopped you from engaging and going to win. Is it like okay to say that this guy went in there not to win? And is it okay for him to get ragged on as a fighter? And you see a fighter fight the way Butler fought. What's your takeaway from that?
Well, I'm going to say what I always say in these kind of situations. You never know what's going through that fighter's mind. Mm-hmm. You know, at the time of the fight, you're not the one in there taking the shots. They are. You know, so you can't really know. I've said this before on pods. Like sometimes you get hit with shots that don't look like anything that changed the entire night. They changed the whole fight. You know, he could have got rocked with a jab early on and didn't even notice it. And then he's just dealing with that all night, trying to catch his equilibrium. Maybe he's not seeing right. Maybe he got an injury. Maybe he's got, you know, you never know. So I never like to speak for a fighter. I don't like to rag on any fighters. I don't like the word quit. That drives me nuts. Or guys throwing fights. I try to think differently that's not something that happens in the sport. But listen, at the end of the day, we're all human beings. We're all living things. We're trying to survive. Mm-hmm. And survival kicks in sometimes if victory is not a possibility. And honestly, at Butler, it didn't look like victory was a possibility.
It felt like a sparring match. And it's wild because Butler's a world champion. You know, this was an undisputed fight.
Sparring match with a heavy bag.
Yeah, seriously, what? We don't know what's going through his mind. But if it's the other, if it's the latter, and he went in there just to survive and make it to 12 rounds, then that's when you can fairly criticize, because this is entertainment. You know, this is his big chance to put forth an effort. And also, like, you know, you have to, you know, if you lose, you can look good in a loss and get fights after this. You know, that's happens all the time. There's my timeline was flooded with, I don't ever want to see Paul Butler fight again. If he's not going to go in there and throw punches, he's going to land four punches a round. So that was the case with Butler. But for Inoue, he is done now at bantamweight. 9 fights, and this is from Rolled Boxing, Cliff Rolled, who's a great follow on Twitter, works for Boxing Scene. 9-0 was Inoue during his bantamweight run. 8 knockouts. He had 7 wins over fighters that were ranked in the top 10 by The Ring magazine. He lost 1 round on 1 scorecard in the Jason Maloney fight, and he lost 3 rounds in the unanimous decision win over Donaire. So 90% of the rounds at bantamweight, he won. He handed Jamie McConnell, Juan Carlos Payano, Emmanuel Rodriguez, Maloney their first knockout losses, and he dealt Donaire, was a future Hall of Famer, only 2 losses in the bantamweight division, and became only the second man to stop the future Hall of Famer. Dominant run. I mean, it doesn't get any more dominant than that. A lot of people out there will tell you, well, he shouldn't be on your pound-for-pound list. He only fights cans. That's just people that just simply aren't, like, educated on Inoue, or a little ignorant to what Inoue has done, because he's fought the majority of his career in Japan. Where do you have Inoue? Do you think he should be pound-for-pound number one, even though I hate pound-for-pound lists?
Yeah, I think he's in the discussion for number one. I don't necessarily have him there yet. I want to see what he's going to do when he moves up. You know, he has had good competition. He has not had great competition. The standout name on the list is Donaire. And, you know, what he did to him in the second fight was absolutely mind blowing. But still, I mean, it's an older Donaire, especially at these lighter weight classes, that puts that age even further away from past his prime. So I would like to see more from him before I put him out there as pound for pound number one. But that being said, he has all the makings of being the best fighter that walks the earth today. I mean, he's got power, speed, chin, endurance. His fights are fun to watch. He knows how to close a show. He knows how to entertain. He's got it all. And I love when he fights. I get excited whenever he fights, even if I wake up at 5:30 in the morning to watch it, or if I have to be up at 2:30 in the morning in order to call the fight. He's got all the makings. I'm not sure he's quite there yet, and you can argue me until you're blue in the face, but it doesn't really matter, because pound for pound is that.
Yeah.
But I do think there's a very strong argument for him, but I need to see him do a little bit more.
What do you mean a little bit? Like what more? Like at 122, or you want
to see? 22. I want to see. There's nothing more to do at 118. He completely wiped out the division. Mm-hmm. But listen, Terrence Crawford wiped out 140. He's been moving through 47. Spence has wiped out 47. Canelo has wiped out multiple weight classes. So it's like, yeah, you got it. There's always comparison when it comes to pound for pound. That's what it's all about. It's all about comparing guys and their records and what they have in there. So I need to see some more. He's completely wiped out 18. What happens at 22? Yo, size matters. And we're seeing that more and more. We talked about it last week with Teofimo moving up to 40. He's not the same guy.
Right.
So I want to see what happens when he moves up. I think the best pound for pound guys, the weight classes don't matter as much. Canelo goes up from 47 to 54 to 60 to 68 mm-hmm. to 75. He finds ways to win. He still is spectacular. Terrence Crawford dominant was at 35, 40, 47. I think most of the time when you see the pound for pound guys, they fought in multiple weight classes, and I need to see that from Inoue.
Yeah, Yeah, in a way, it has come up from 108 to 112 to 115, now 118. We'll see what happens at 122. Before we move on to the next topic, I think any way you got it, these three, I think, are top three, whether it's Usyk, in a way, or Bud. And then I got Canelo right outside of that. Or like, I don't make the list, but I do like put the top five. You know, Spence probably in there as well, or maybe Bivol. And I'm about to name 10 right now. I pretty much just made a pound for pound list. But I think
I can see Canelo getting right back in there.
He's definitely
very,
top
very
five.
Soon. Yeah,
Usyk, I think, is the best fighter in the world. Like, you talk about going up different weight classes, like, and not matter. And like, this guy went from cruiserweight to heavyweight and beat Anthony Joshua, who's undersized, against him. And then Bud, obviously, what we saw from Bud. So that, I just think, in a way, is in that level, and we're going to see it at 122. And that's the next topic, is in a way at 122 pounds. Stephen Fulton, obviously, is the fight we all want to see. Stephen Fulton, I think, is moving up to featherweight. That's why I said after the fight that I don't think that fight happens anytime soon. That's, get that out of the way. That's the fight we all want to see, and that's the fight to make. One of the top five best fights to make in boxing. But there's some other names at 122. MJ Akhmadaliev, Rogi Salim, Luis Neri just sent out a tweet saying that he would welcome him to 122. Are there any names out there, do you think, that could threaten in a way at 122?
I like the Akhmadaliev fight. I think he's a very talented guy. He's durable. I would like to see how the power comes up from 18. And yeah, I think he'd be a perfect person to test that against, because He's a very solid, very strong guy. He's very aggressive. He's going to be there to get hit. So I think that's a really nice, fun, fan-friendly fight.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens with Inoue. Finishes off the year going undisputed. It looks like Figueroa and Fulton are going to fight at featherweight for their rematch. Maybe Fulton goes back down to fight Inoue, because it's the biggest money fight that he could possibly get. Then you have to go through the whole top-ranked PBC nonsense. But that's a fight all fight fans want to see, is Inoue and Fulton. All right, over to Terrence Crawford's gloves. Glovegate once again. Right before the knockout of Evanescian, it looked like the gloves were starting to burst on Terrence Crawford, his Everlast gloves. Between the fifth and sixth round, Sparkle Lee, referee, saw some of the padding coming out of the thumb area, and you can see like it was like a huge gashes in the gloves around the thumb, completely busted up, to the point where they had to stop in between the fifth and sixth round, and they went to the commission had no idea what to do. They probably never seen something like this. They're in Nebraska, don't do a lot of fights there, and they were like, all right, let's just go another round, and then, you know, we'll figure out, maybe we'll Google what to do in between the round. But there wasn't another round, because Terrence Crawford knocked out Evanescian. Everlast has put out a statement. We take safety and performance seriously. As the leader in professional boxing equipment, maybe not anymore, it is ever more important that we ensure necessary steps in place to review our product development. This process includes scrutiny and of all materials and construction methods, blah, blah, blah. They are saying that there was nothing, you know, nothing done wrong here. Terrence Crawford didn't mess with the gloves. Were you an Everlast guy? Have you ever seen gloves busting up in the middle of a fight?
I'm not an Everlast guy. I was a Grant and then Rival, but I think I fought in everything. I fought in Reyes. I fought in Everlast. I fought in multiple different kinds of Ray. That's another thing about Everlast. They have a bunch of different styles of glove, and they're all different. So I was never really a big fan of the Everlast gloves. I always felt like they didn't protect my hand the best way possible. And I had a bunch of hand injuries, especially early on in my career. But yeah, I mean, listen, there are freak accidents, and guys are punching hard. It's obviously Terrence Crawford punches very hard, and you know the gloves are leather, they're seamed, they're hand stitched most of the time. It's very easy for them, not very easy, but it can happen that there could be, you know, a tear. And I mean, it's happened before. It hasn't really happened in the modern era, but yeah, that's that kind of situation. Honestly, we try on multiple gloves before we fight. The same glove, there'll be two or three pairs that you try on, and you pick which ones you want. So there are extra gloves available, usually right in the back. So if that's the situation, that they should be on hand, where it's like, all right, we got to swap a glove out. Do it as quick as possible. You know, it's obviously going to be a break in the time. That sucks for the fight, but what else are you going to do? You can't tape it. You can't tape the glove. It's a striking area.
They probably should have taken them off. If it went long, I would like to see if it went longer, what would have happened?
Yeah, that's what I mean. They would have had to have taken it off and replaced the glove. And like I said, they normally have those available within the arena. Someone had to run back and get them.
Wouldn't have took that long.
No, it wouldn't take that long, but it would be a significant break in the action.
Like 10 minutes.
That's a lot. In the middle of a fight, that's a long time.
I mean, Fan Man, when he flew into the ring, they were, you know, loading the towels
up.
I
mean, it happens, yeah. It happens. Obviously, it's something that's going to be go down in history, like you said, Glovegate. But it's
well, there's a whole population of fans out there that think that Tyson Fury loaded his gloves against Fury. I mean, Tyson Fury loaded his gloves against Wilder.
Against Wilder. Well, I mean, I think Wilder's team put that out there, but that was a weird one too. I think it's just the way that his hands are, his flexibility of his hands. I didn't see him like anything.
Yeah. Everlast,
and especially
out.
Since then, he's been knocking everybody out anyway.
Yeah,
so
I know.
Not like...
That was just conspiracy. That's like the world we're living in now. Like QAnon meets the boxing world. Like every fight, every knockout's a dive. Every single fighter's gloves are loaded. Everlast pointed out that it followed the commission protocol by offering another set of gloves, but that the commission in question had deemed the faulty ones were still good for competition use. Everlast says no foul play or tampering with Crawford's gloves. We'll see if Crawford uses Everlast again. Evanescian put out a picture of it, just the gloves. No caption. Just he straight up tweeted a picture of the gloves, and he probably feels like something was up. But
yeah, he probably thought they were tampered with, and they were not. The integrity was botched.
He got sparked. Over more news in the welterweight division. I love this fight. Just got not announced, but a purse bid was won by Golden Boy, $2.3 million. For Virgil Ortiz versus Amantis Stanionis, two fighters on the rise, two undefeated welterweights, two pressure fighters, two top 10 welterweights. Winner really emerges as someone that's going to be in the title hunt. Winner emerges as someone that can maybe fight Bud, maybe fight Spence if they stick around at 147. Golden Boy wins the purse bid. The way it worked out is Stanionis is the champion, the WBA whatever, super champion. So he gets 75% of the purse. At least officially. That's crazy, right? Because Virgil Ortiz is a way bigger draw than Stanionis. But it will be on DAZN. I'm sure Virgil Ortiz will get more money in the back end from Golden Boy or whatever. But love this fight for all the reasons I just named, and just add it to the list of really good fights for 2023.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about welterweight division, you've got Spence and Crawford, right?
Yep.
And then everybody else. That's just the way it goes. And now we're waiting to see what's going to happen with them, obviously. I don't believe Spence is going to spend too much more time at 47, even no matter what happens with the Bud fight. So there's going to be a vacuum opened up, and who knows how long Terrence is actually going to fight for. 35 years old. I've heard him talk about retirement before. So you've got these young studs, and I think Virgil Ortiz is probably the leader in that group. And then you got some of those older guys who are still around, the Keith Thurmans. You know, you've got who are now kind of becoming the same. You've got the older guy and the younger guys that are coming up. So they're meeting in the middle. So those are like almost like the next level underneath the pound for pound elites of Crawford and Spence. So this is a very meaningful fight for the division. Stanionis is a stud, but man, I always back Virgil Ortiz. I have been so impressed with him in every way. The first time I saw him live on the undercard of Danny Jacobs and Canelo Alvarez, and he looked super impressive. Very, very strong, very powerful, throws tons of combinations, great endurance, huge for the weight class, absolutely gigantic for 47. So this is a massive, massive fight. I'll be tuned in with the popcorn ready.
He is Ortiz is 19-0 with 19 knockouts. He's one of like three or four fighters currently. Better be have one of them off the top of my head. That have knocked out every single opponent that they've been in there with. Stanionis came off that big win over Butaev. And you're absolutely right. Like, I've said this for a while now. Like, the welterweight division is starting to the top of the division. It's very top-heavy. The top of the division is Spence Crawford in terms of skill, in terms of name. You can add Thurman in there. Sean Porter just retired. And then you got Boots. You got Virgil Ortiz. You got Stanionis. And, you know, Stanionis and Virgil Ortiz fight next year, and now one will emerge. And hopefully Boots gets in the mix, and we see some movement at welterweight. Because welterweight is the best division, you know, historically in boxing, and it's stagnant right now. And it's because of Spence and Crawford not fighting each other. They've kind of you know, glutted it up and slowed things down a lot. Glutted it up. I'm going to say it again. They glutted it up. What is that even a phrase? I don't care. I make phrases up every episode. Glutted it up is the newest one.
Need that on a shirt.
I that's a shirt. That's a
welterweight is glutted up. That's the shirt.
We've got a lot of inquiries about merch from some fans and some super fans out there. So that might be a shirt. But it's not for a lack of talent, the welterweight division, because there's a ton of talented guys. You just mentioned five of them, between Boots and Ortiz and Stanionis and Spence, Crawford, Keith Thurman. There's tons of talent, but we need them to fight each other, and that's what this fight is. So bring it on.
Yeah, let me look at the – I like the ring ratings. I think that they do a good job putting together
ratings. I've always liked the ring.
What?
I've always liked the ring ratings. Yeah.
They got Spence number one. They got Crawford number two. They got Ennis three. They got Ugas in there. I forgot about him. Virgil Ortiz, five. Six, Stanionis. Seven, Thurman. Eight, Conor Benn with a – no. He's not in the top ten anymore. He came out and said that he's finally spoke. Did you see his comments?
I did. I got sent to it. I sent it by several people.
He is just saying, like, I'm innocent, and you're going to see. His wife has tweeted. I mean, come on.
Okay.
Come on, bro. You failed two tests. Like, what are we doing here? Yeah, that's annoying. Butayev, yeah. So, like, pretty much what we said. So, it's very top-heavy, but who's got next? And we're going to figure it out next year. Hopefully, Ennis is in the mix because I think he's the best of the bunch. I think he's slightly better than Ortiz.
I think in terms of talent and like and his style, he's definitely the most difficult style. Ortiz, I think is phenomenal. I love the way he fights. I mean, he's a machine. He's going out there and he's throwing tons of punches. He's in the mix, but Boots is just he can box too. He's got that East Coast boxing. Plus, he's got power. He sets things up. He can take a punch. He's another one. He's got it all and some.
That sucks. He only fought once this year. That's insane, and a lot of it had to do to politics. He's playing that mandatory game and. You know, he is mandatory for another number of organizations for Spencer Crawford's belts and kind of bit him in the ass because he only fought once this year. He's on the January 7th card for Tank. Get more active. Which leads to my next topic, and that is Devin Haney pleading with Top Rank to fight Lomachenko in March before Ramadan. I think this has to do with one of the biggest issues in boxing right now, in my opinion, is networks not having enough dates for the fighters. I think this happens most notably to PBC guys. In this case, it's the Top Rank issue where they've signed so many fighters. PBC has over 200 fighters. They don't do any more fights on Fox. So that means they have a ton of fighters signed to their banner with one network being Showtime, and Showtime simply doesn't have enough dates. This seems to be the case with ESPN. I know ESPN... Boxing isn't the number one priority with ESPN. It's college football, it's the NFL, and then you go down the list, UFC. I'm sure that I'm sure Top Rank wants Loma versus Haney to happen in March, but they're like, the best we can do right now is May, April, May, and that's not good for anybody. Like, Haney wants to fight before March. I'm sure Loma wants to fight before March. Bob Arum wants it to be done, but you're in bed with these networks, and that's where you make all your money, so you have to sit and wait. That's what's happening here, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a really good take on it. It's a shame because, you know, there's only so much of the sporting market pie, and it just seems like boxing is getting whittled down more and more. We're seeing less and less shows, less and less dates. But listen, boxing's not helping itself. The last quarter of this year, how many big fights fell through at no one else's fault other than the boxing game itself? And it's a real shame, and not making these big fights is not going to help get more dates.
Yeah, it's frustrating because this is like a big fight. It's like a no-brainer. They've been talking about it for a while. It's been penciled in since last year, and both guys want it. The promoter wants it, and now they're talking like, you know, Haney's tweeting nonstop that, man, that I'm not going to get this fight until April or May. Like, there's no reason this fight shouldn't happen. It shouldn't take that long to make this fight. This is a perfect fight in March. They don't want to go up against March Madness, but forget that whole thinking, like going up against other sports. Like, boxing fans are going to watch. It's going to get close to a million views on ESPN, just like Teofimo's fight did this past weekend. You know, getting close to a million viewers. Probably might even do more because Haney and Loma are pretty well known outside of the boxing world. So get it done. I want to see that fight. I think all boxing fans do it. Final headline here before we get to our top five. Anthony Joshua, our favorite fighter to dissect, is now headed back to the drawing board in terms of a trainer. He was spotted at Derek James's gym. I think this is a new stop for Joshua. He's no longer going to be trained by Robert Garcia. Robert Garcia had a better game plan against Usyk, but Joshua still lost. Garcia had some interesting quotes. Garcia pretty much said, I'm kind of summarizing it here, is that I have no hard feelings against Joshua, but I think that he needs to find someone where he is not the boss. He can't say, hey, I have my training today because I didn't get enough sleep. My training tickets, I have a Hugo Boss shoot. You need to come to the States, he said. Find a trainer in the States, train there, spar there, where they're the boss, not you, on your superstar schedule. I thought that was pretty interesting. And also training with Derek James is also, I don't know where he'll settle on, but this is now going to be three fights. His last three fights are going to be three different trainers for Joshua.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear about the Robert Garcia move, but he did way better than I expected. I mean, I thought he boxed really well in the fight against Usyk, the rematch. And I think I saw some of the things that Robert was trying to get him to do. So it's tough, man. When you have one camp with a coach, to try and see real change is very, very difficult. You know, I feel like it would take more camps for Joshua and Garcia to meld. And I kind of would like to see where that would go, especially since there was improvement in the Usyk rematch. But with those quotes coming from Garcia, obviously he wasn't really happy with the way things went either, or the way that Joshua is handling his own training camp. So I think that's a very, very indicative statement coming from Garcia, you know, telling him what he needs to do pretty much outside of his training, which is really important.
Yeah, I think Garcia said he would like pretty much what you just said, like we need more time together. But if Joshua was talking about fighting in the spring, you know, I have my guys that I've been with forever. And I think Jose Ramirez being one of them, getting ready for that pro grade fight. And, you know, I'm loyal to those guys, even though he'll probably make more money with Joshua. I've been saying this for years. There's nothing crazy here. Is that Joshua, if he really wants good sparring and he really wants to really drastically change, just come over here. Stay here for longer than, like, these two-week stints and, like, spar some of the guys here. Go out of your comfort zone. He's too comfortable over there. And that's fine. He's making a lot of money, and he's a massive star over there. But it's clearly not working. Like, seems like he's willing to try everything and anything to get better, and I respect that from him a lot. But if he decided to come over here and spend some significant time and, like, really come out of his comfort zone, I think that could be the ultimate, you know, maybe that gets him across the finish line and get into that win column.
Peak performance takes sacrifice. Coming across the pond is a big sacrifice. It would be very difficult for him to, you know, leave his family, leave his comfort zone. But listen, that's what it takes to really get anywhere in this world, especially when you need to, especially get out of a rut, like the way that Josh is trying to, you know, getting out of your comfort zone, getting away from home, you know, being lonely. For training camp can suck. It's not a bad thing when training camp sucks. It hardens you it hardens your soul. It hardens your grit, hardens your mentality. And that's exactly what Joshua needs. Yeah. He doesn't need to be sleeping in silk sheets and doing boss shoots for, you know, tens and fifties, thousands of dollars and whatnot. So it might not be a bad idea to come over here. Come on over to Miami. We got plenty of heavyweights down here, and the weather's great.
I want to see Algeri with Joshua, and then I will fly down to Miami and for a great interview. I love talking to Joshua.
Yeah, we'd probably get along great. I mean, training-wise.
I interviewed him once, and it was awesome. He's like, wait. He's like, you're a CompuBox guy? And I was like, yeah. He's like, oh, we were just talking about you last night, CompuBox. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, we're looking to buy it. We're looking to buy it, and you and BoxRec. And he's like, damn. He's like, you're Compu. That's a big deal. And I'm sitting there like, dude, like, you're a big deal. You're Anthony Joshua. Like, you think, like, yeah, we are in our little slice of the pie in boxing world, CompuBox. But he was cool, a very interesting guy. And
well, if you talk to Bob about selling it, you know, he Joshua just said it's a big deal, so you can up that price tag.
I already tried. I'm right away. I got his one of his friends.
Yes, take it.
Yeah, he's got like 10 members of his entourage. I said, which one of you handles the business? Give me your card. Put him in touch right away. Obviously, we did not sell CompuBox to Anthony Joshua, so maybe next time. Maybe next we'll have to get that transaction through. All right, let's go to our top five list. Top five boxing quotes. Okay. Chris, do you want to start it off? I think yours is going to be a lot different than mine.
Do you want to go one-on-one? How do you want to do them? You want to go back and forth?
One-on-one or just read your five?
Read your five.
Read your five. Chris, you're up first.
Okay,
top five
so
boxing quotes.
This is an absolute classic. The fight is won or lost far from witnesses, behind the lines, in the gym, and out there on the road, long before I danced under those lights. Muhammad Ali, of course. One of his greatest, the most iconic. And we're talking about training camp. That's exactly what that's about. So that's a great one.
You could probably go all day with Ali quotes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I have all the great heavyweights on here, the older great heavyweights, because these guys are fantastic. Speaking of, boxing is the sport to which all other sports aspire. Hmm. George Foreman said that.
Love that.
I use that all the time because so many people are like, oh, man, boxing. When you run into other athletes, guys love talking about fights. It's just that's never going to change. This front is from Joyce Carol Oates. The book is on boxing. Without a doubt, it is our most dramatically masculine sport and our most dramatically self-destructive sport. In this, for some of us, its abiding interest lies.
Dude, that one's this one that sticks out the most to me.
Oh, that one's so awesome. It's just
because how many fighters have like reached that top and then also self-destructed?
We all do. We hold it. We self-destruct each night, each fight. I mean, we leave a piece of ourselves in there. We damage ourselves in camp, but then we go and damage ourselves in front of the world. Wow. So yeah, the self-destruction is all too real. I love this one. Joe Frazier, Smoking Joe. I don't want to knock my opponent out. I want to hit him, step away, and watch him hurt. I want his heart. Ooh, I'm going to get you chills.
That's the type of mentality you need.
Uh-huh. And that's Smoking Joe to a T. He wants to bust you up. And then one that I, no, certainly not. And this is one that I post on Valentine's Day every year. Everyone who follows my Instagram knows that it's like being in love with a woman. She could be unfaithful. She can be mean. She can be cruel, but it doesn't matter. If you love her, you want her, even though she can do you all kinds of harm. Mm. It's the same with me in boxing. It can do me all kinds of harm, but I love it. Floyd Patterson.
Wow.
It's like every relationship.
Yeah. And you've been in love with boxing the longest, so.
I know. It's sad. I've been around this sport forever. I'm stuck with it. That's my quote.
I'm stuck with it.
Is that it?
That's it.
Oh, no.
I'm getting a little
emotional.
Chris is getting emotional over these quotes. Are you really?
No, I just said something
like that. I don't think I've ever seen you like emotional, but if it was, it would be from boxing quotes.
Yeah, true.
No, like your quotes on, like when you post something on Instagram, like, and you put those quotes, like it means something. Like those are like, seems like you take that mental side of it very seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you brought up that we were going to do the top five boxing quotes, it's like, well, I got 200 on my notepad on my phone. So that's, I've been such a fan of this sport for so long. And I did a lot of reading when it came to boxing, because early on, I mean, I'm in the days when there were still libraries, and I would go, I mean, not there's not libraries anymore, but you didn't have to Google, anything. Oh, you couldn't Google anything.
A library? I never went to West Virginia University.
So I've taken out every book there was at my local library when I was a kid, and I read a lot, and I took a lot of notes, and I liked quotes, and I love reading boxing books. I just love everything about it, everything around it. So for me, these quotes, first of all, they've been a part of my life for a long time, but also they just, as my career has developed and my love affair with the sport has developed, they mean that much more. So I hold all of these very near and dear.
I'll get to mine. I hold this one very near and dear to my heart. It's my number five. Let me pour some water on your balls.
Okay.
So you know that
was
from?
Who?
Mm-mm. Eric Morales, trainer, in his fight with Zahir Rahim in the corner. He lost that fight, Eric Morales. Heading into the 12th and final round.
Is that here where Raheem could fight?
We're heading into the 12th and final round. Morales is down in the cards. He's overheating. HBO goes into the corner. Translator Ray Torres was a little too literal with this translation. He translated what the corner said. And he said, come over here. Let me pour some water on your balls. One of the best lines ever, in my humble, honest opinion. And
that was a good impression too, by the way, Dan. That was solid.
You probably remember it just from that impression because I watched it a bunch. We're gonna try to put it into this episode right in between there, Ronnie.
Okay.
Let me pour some water on your balls.
All right.
Let me try it one more time, and then I'm gonna say it, and then you're gonna play it. Let me pour some water on your balls. Boom.
That was good. That's really good.
I know. I've watched this clip many, many times, many, many years.
What is he translating? Is he like language?
Spanish. He's speaking Spanish. It's Eric Morales, Mexican. Yeah.
Yeah, Morales, Mexican fighter.
Well, I wonder
just
how.
Just wanted to squirt it right down and right there. And it's probably smoking hot down there.
I wonder how he said it in Spanish.
And like,
yeah,
the translator probably didn't have to say it, but
no,
again,
no,
like,
it's a lot.
It's raw. I mean, it's a raw moment of the fight. HBO was trendsetters by putting the microphone in the corner, something that they don't do anymore in any fights, even DAZN, who don't have commercials. Well, they put a commercial in now. Showtime doesn't do it. They do it after the fight. Trainer tracks. Like, they do like a montage. There was nothing better, in my opinion, than HBO in between a fight. Like, in your fight with Provodnikov, go right into that corner after the first round. What the hell is going on in that corner? It's reality TV. It's chaos for 1 minute. Tell me the story that's chaos. Going on there.
Chaos. That's 100%. That's what the corner is. Even the comments corner is it's a drag race. You're the pit crew is working on you, and you've got people talking to you, and there's sweat, and there's blood, and there's doctors checking on you. I mean, yeah, that's a massive part of the drama of any fight.
Yeah, you got chaos, and you got, let me pour some water on you, balls. Moving on. Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face.
I like that one.
Classic Mike Tyson.
Mike Tyson.
I like that one.
This could, like, I could do like 15 Mike Tyson ones.
Mike's got great ones.
It's a quote. Let's go to another one from Mike Tyson. We'll double up. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. All praise be to Allah. Ronnie's.
I've got another really good one from him that I cannot say on air, or we will get canceled.
Ronnie, he said that to Lennox Lewis.
Wow.
One of the most infamous press conferences. My dad was at that press conference for their fight. Tyson clearly was rattled, clearly was bothered by Lennox Lewis, and he went into that mode where he couldn't bully Lennox Lewis, so therefore he just was going off. He bit him, bit his leg. They fought at the press conference, and then afterwards he went off on that reporter, said some really nasty things that I'm not even going to say.
Really nasty, yeah. That's the one we're not going
to
say.
And then, I want your heart. I want to eat your children. All praise be to Allah. Mike Tyson. Only in America. Simple.
Donnie King.
Don King waving the American flag. Only in America. Only in America can Don King convict felon. Go from that to the penthouse. Be one of the most powerful promoters in all of boxing. Still to this, not powerful, but he's still around. Seen him at a fight.
Yeah, his offices are right around the corner from me.
I'm sure he's there right, on his musty desk saying, only in America.
Awesome pictures of all over the walls and belts and lots of money stashed somewhere.
I think only in America is like a perfect like line for boxing. Like
well, that was
boxing,
that was the
only America.
That was the name of the HBO documentary movie they made. Well, it wasn't a documentary. It was a movie about his life. Like, only in America. It was pretty badass.
He says it over and over and over. I think I have six, but I'm still gonna roll with it. Even if you dream of beating me, you better wake up and apologize. Muhammad Ali. That is just a line.
That's awesome.
Muhammad Ali has so many good ones where he pretty much created trash talk. He pretty much created hip hop. Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. That one was too famous that I didn't have it on my list. But just mental warfare. He was the first to do it, I think. And even if you dream of beating me, you better wake up and apologize. Love that. From Muhammad Ali. And finally, my last one. Save the best for last. You don't know shit about boxing.
Roger Floyd Mayweather. Yeah, Roger Mayweather, yep.
Rest in peace, Raj.
Is that Floyd's dad?
Floyd's uncle.
Floyd's uncle?
His lead trainer for years, 24-7. When HBO did those, Roger Mayweather became a freaking star to the point where he would be swarmed at fights, swarmed at the weigh-ins fans. And one of the, I'm pretty sure it happened on 24-7 where he just said, his answer for everything was just, you don't know shit about boxing. I actually have a shirt at home with Roger Mayweather's face on it. It just says, you don't know shit about boxing.
That's my answer to most people's questions, too, by the way. When people ask me in public or at gyms, listen, you don't know shit. You don't know the half of this. You know nothing about what this game really is.
It's literally everyone's line. If you're in an argument and you don't know what to say on Twitter or you're running out of things, you don't know shit about boxing. Like, Leonard Ellerby, I think, said that to me numerous times.
Wow.
Well, Roger kicked me out of his gym.
Nice.
Two or three times, at least, cursing me out.
I feel like everyone respects you.
I don't know. He didn't like the way I made eye contact with him, apparently. That's my trainer told me.
This guy's too pretty. I want him out of here.
He's like, who the fuck is this guy? Yeah, it was pretty much around the...
Mayweather Boxing Club?
I was only 10-0 at the time, so it's not like anybody knew who I was.
Was that the one in that's in, like, the... What is it? Like
that Chinatown area?
District? I've been there.
Yep, Yep.
It's cool. That's like
I sparred there. I sparred there like half a dozen times, and got kicked out half of those half a dozen.
Wow. They can just do that. They're out. Get out.
Yeah, get the fuck out of my gym. That's what he said.
I would have left. I would have been like, okay, fine, I'm out.
I looked around like, you talking to me? Like, I'm here to spar. Like I'm not. I still got to spar. That was we had to do a little negotiating to get that.
To get
me to get some sparring.
Yeah, love that. All right, those are our lists. Some good ones. Chris is far different than mine, but would you expect anything less?
yours had a little bit of levity in there. Mine was heart wrenching.
Well, you're the one that steps into the ring. You need that. You need those quotes to get you through training. I'm the one who finds the ridiculousness of this sport.
Well, I live the quotes, and you have fun. This is you love it too. But
I have
it,
one.
There's
you got one? Ronnie's got a quote.
I have a quote. I don't even remember the quote, but it is Triple G's catchphrase. I don't remember it. What was it?
Good boy.
Good boy. The good boy.
No. Or... Triple G's. He used to say something that you try to make him say. He's like, "Come on, guy."
Oh, big drama show.
There you go. That's the one.
Big drama show. Yeah.
He wouldn't say. I tried to get him to say it at the Canelo thing. He said something like, "That's gonna cost you" or something.
No, he said, "Come on, guy. Don't."
Come on, man. Yeah. It was a while where Triple G was like straight up.
He's not as
like,
nice as he used to be. Yeah.
No. He just, after he lost that second fight to Canelo, all that went out the window. The whole marketing, HBO marketing thing, like, "Oh, Max, you're a good boy." And he would say, "Big drama show." He was like pretty much like a pull cord toy where they gave him like five phrases in Mexican style and just like, "Keep saying this over and over and fight fans will love you." And then he got his bag and then he's like, "I'm done saying these stupid freaking things you made me say."
It's like Coach O with Go Tigers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he get his bag, or was he just so pissed that he thought he got robbed in that second fight, which a lot of people did as well? You know, did he go, "You know what? I fucking danced the dance, and you still robbed me. So, no, I'm done playing the game."
Yeah, 100%. He changed the spelling of his name back to like the way it's supposed to be originally in Kazakhstan, and stopped doing interviews in English. And yeah, I don't blame him. I mean,
I've had him in a couple of fighter meetings. He definitely was not the best interviewer.
No, he's a terrible interview, but he's a legend in the sport. All right, finally. Yeah.
Nice. He's still a nice guy, though. I think I never had a problem.
I mean, I understand. That guy got screwed over twice. So, like you said, I ain't doing that. I ain't jumping through those hoops anymore. Let me pour some water on your balls. All right, here we go. Michelle Rivera versus Frank Martin. It is the fight this weekend over on Showtime. Get towards the end of the schedule here, the boxing schedule. I love this fight, Chris. True 50-50 scrap between two prospects where the winner is going to establish themselves as a title contender. These fights used to happen all the time on ESPN Friday Night Fights, HBO Boxing After Dark. Don't see them as much anymore, but we're getting a true throwback fight where the winner will emerge, a true throwback fight where these guys don't have to fight each other. They could sit back and wait, but they are going to fight each other, and they should get our respect.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, we miss this. And I have talked about this on the show many, many times. You've got that prospect-prospect matchup. And one guy is going to go on to contender status. One guy's going to have to start over and fight his way back up. It's something everyone goes through in their career. But we're seeing it with guys now that you're not getting in true 50-50 fights. You're getting guys that are at that point, and maybe they're a little bit past. They should have already fought for that. And they fight some guy who's not ready yet. And then, you know, they want the money guy to go that guy, or the A side to go up, and he's going to beat this guy who's not quite ready yet. You're not getting these kind of fights where both fighters have to elevate in order to achieve victory. This is one of those fights. This is going to literally make a guy who's like, "All right, this is a true contender in the division, and that we're going to be seeing for a while to come." And I tip my hat to both guys, their managers, their promoters, everybody, their trainers, to make this fight happen. And I think it's actually going to be a really good fight.
Yeah, it is. Styles make fights. That's a saying. If we did top five boxing sayings, that would be one of them. Combined 40-0 record, these two, 26 KOs. Rivera, tall, rangy, has a really good jab in and out. Martin wants to fight on the inside. Take him into deep waters. Those usually make for really good fights. We'll start with Michelle Rivera. You probably know him because he's fought on a lot of big, prominent PBC cards. He loves Muhammad Ali, so he's kind of styled himself as Muhammad Ali, white trunks with a black down the middle, everything. Same haircut. Also, one of his heroes is Trinidad, Felix Trinidad, and he kind of resembles him a little bit in there too. But inside the ring, guy's ferocious. He's got power. He's got a really good jab. Lands 7 jabs around. Throws 53 punches around. Lands 45% of his power shots. Good defense. Keeps his opponents under 10 punches landed around. For some context, the lightweight average is 16 landed punches around. So he's well under that. Really like Michel Rivera. Good fighter. And he's going to try to box around. You know, get in there, land a few shots, box around, and try to get a decision. Maybe try to knock him out and wear him down late. That's why how I see that fight going for Rivera.
Yeah, he honestly, he does have a little Ali in him, as much as he's got that shtick where he dresses like him, which I really dislike because I don't think the kid needs it. I think he has a lot to offer the fans with his own style. But even stylistically, he's able to move. He can box. He can punch. He lets his hands go. This is a really good boxer puncher matchup. And except that Michel can actually punch too. He's not just a pure boxer. He's got some pop. He stopped some good guys. And yeah, I think this kind of fight, I mean, it's a true pick'em fight. I'll tell you who I favor in a little bit, but I am a big fan of Michel Rivera and the way that he fights. And I was just looking at his record just before he got on air. And I was like, wow, he's actually had some pretty good wins for a prospect coming into this fight. So he's going to be prepared as well.
Yeah, I think Rivera's a little bit ahead of Martin in terms of development.
Experience, yeah.
Yeah, Martin got started late, 22 years old. He started, he's 27. He's not, you know, he's not young. But Rivera's good, man. John Fernandez, go back and watch that fight if you're listening to this before you watch this fight. John Fernandez was 21-0 with 18 knockouts. Ferociously hard puncher. He had Rivera down early in the fight. Maybe could have been a slip, but it was counted as a knockdown. So a little bit of adversity for Rivera. Two rounds later, Rivera ices him with a 1-2 combination, just out cold. Didn't even count the 10. Fernandez was out. So he's got power. He talked about the jab. That's what he's going to try to do in this fight because Martin is really good on the inside. He's going to try to take it to the – he's a smaller fighter. He's going to try to take it to the inside. I think what's going for Martin is his power punching, 48% of his power shots. He's very precise. He gets in close, easier to land when you're in close. He started late in the game, like I said, 22 years old. He won 7 national Golden Glove tournaments. He started really late in the game. Like I said, smaller of the two, showed some power. He stopped Duno, Romero Duno in 4. He stopped Jackson Marinas in 10. Marinas was a short notice, but still stopped him. And that Marinas performance, I think, was one of his best. Landed almost 50% of his power shots. I see this fight playing out just like we said. Rivera dancing around in the outside, coming in, and Martin trying to get in close, go hammer to the body, take him into deep waters. Whoever's able to institute their game plan, I know that's very cliche, but I honestly think that's how this fight will play out.
Yeah, this is a battle of real estate. It's who can fight the fight where they want it. Obviously, Martin wants to be on the inside. Rivera wants to be on the outside using that stick and the long, you know, his punches are, he has the most power on the end of his punches because he's a taller, longer guy. But Martin, I mean, he's a body bruiser. He's going to go in and try and destroy the body, bring the head down. And it's got all the makings of a classic matchup or a fight that's going to be fantastic. I really want to see what happens to Rivera when he's in the trenches, when he has to fight on the inside with a guy who is physically very strong and can punch. So that's going to be the big question. Oh, and the other question is, can Martin close the distance, get inside without taking too much damage on the way in so he can get his work done? Like I said,
I'm leaning Rivera. I think he's more experienced.
Well, that's good. I'm leaning Martin.
And why are you going Martin?
I like his physicality. I think that in a dog fight, if he can really get this into like a trench fight, which listen, these kind of fights, there's always going to be those moments. I think he's going to be able to capitalize and do some damage.
Yeah, Martin's going to try to do that late. I think
fight
will be won.
Well, he's going to try and do it throughout, but he might not be able to do it till late.
Yeah, final 3 rounds. I see getting into that late portion of the fight and who has more left in the tank. Martin trying to get it inside. Love this fight.
I usually go for the boxer, but I don't know. I got an idea about Martin.
Showtime Saturday night main event. Winner will really emerge. Talking about a division that could see a lot of belts be relinquished if it's going to be Lomachenko and Haney fighting and Haney moving up to 135. So that's what's the main event this weekend. Ronnie, do you have a casual?
Yes. I'm gonna make it quick though. What's the biggest controversy with going back to the glove situation? What's the biggest controversy there has been with gloves in terms of tampering and stuff like that?
You know it, Chris.
Yeah. I mean, it's it was a very good documentary about it. You should actually watch it. Okay. What's the name of it, Dan?
I'm thinking Margarito Cotto.
Yeah, but even before that is I can't believe we're gonna get killed on Twitter now. Margarito Cotto, it was a huge one. So in that one, Ronnie, what happened is Margarito fought Cotto. He stopped him, beat him up. I mean, his face was a mess, and Cotto had only ever been stopped by Manny Pacquiao prior to that. And so it was like, man, like, wow, no one really expected that. We knew it was gonna be a good Mexican Puerto Rican battle, and it was, but it just seemed like Margarito, everything he landed did a massive his amount of damage, and Cotto's face was destroyed. And his face was never really like that. He's never really the kind of guy to get busted up, other than Pacquiao, but that's Pacquiao. So Margarito now gets a fight with Shane Mosley. Shane Mosley had not been super active at the time. He was, you know, he moved up from 47. This fight was at 54, right?
Yeah,
it was a 54. He moved up 47, where he had beat De La Hoya twice. I will beat De La Hoya at 54 as well. But so before the fight, while they're getting their hands wrapped, it's, I think it was Nazir Richardson, right?
Yep.
Is that who caught him? Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's in the back. He's the trainer of Shane Mosley. He notices something funny about the way that they're applying the gauze on the hand. Mm-hmm. And what a lot of times is that what trainers would do, the guys who are cheating and disgusting, is they would use plaster of Paris. And it needs to be wet, and it needs to dry in order to dry hard. So when it's not wet, or when it's wet and not dried, it's malleable. So you fold it and you roll it and you make a gauze pad, you put it on top of the wrist. But as they do it, they're using the sweat from the forehead, they're using the water from this, and they're adding water to it. And then as you fight and as you sweat into the glove, that plaster of Paris starts to harden around the hand. And then as the fight gets later and later, that gauze becomes a cast. It's harder and harder harder.
Yeah,
so you're breaking bones in people's faces. You're causing cuts because you're basically hitting someone with a cast that has a few ounces of padding over it, rather than a normal glove.
The wild thing about it was they caught it in the locker room
before.
So it became a story on HBO. They mentioned it on the telecast. The fight went on. Mosley
and Shane destroys. Yeah.
Destroys Margarito, probably because in his brain, he's probably like, I'm about to be exposed. But then they said, oh, wow, now I'm going back to that Cotto fight. This makes sense why Cotto got beat so bad and his face was so messed up. It's because he probably did it for that fight, too, and they didn't get caught.
Yep, and then they had a rematch, and Cotto kicked his ass.
I was there for that night. Wow. That night was every Cotto fight at the Garden was loud. That was the loudest I've ever heard MSG, because it was like get back, retribution.
That was the redemption fight.
It was
unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
And then Pacquiao fought Margarito and broke his face in half. Literally, his eye is his. Ronnie, he looks like he has a Terminator eye. His eye is so badly. Yeah. His orbital and the side of his skull is so badly broken. Eye doesn't look like it works. It might not even be real.
So
it's wild.
He basically was turning his fists into like bricks.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he never got like proven. Like it's still like kind of murky. Like there are a lot of fans out there that don't think it. Like there are some people in the media that are like steadfast that it was, they never figured it out, never proved it.
Assault in the Ring. That's a documentary. Go watch that, Ronnie.
Nice,
that's a good one.
Good for you.
Assault in the Ring. It covers that where that has happened in the past. Yeah.
Before we say goodbye, when you listen to this show, it is a very special member's birthday.
Oh,
Ronnie Jerez is turning 23 years old. Ronnie, come over here, man.
Next to you?
You
got me a cupcake?
Got him a cupcake.
Big boy.
Let's sing happy birthday to Ronnie. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Ronnie. Happy birthday to you. Yeah, blow it out.
Thank you, Dan. This is crazy.
Big man.
23 years old.
23.
Our tech guy said if there is any smoke, we have very sensitive sprinklers here. So if you see water shooting down, it's because...
That'd be awesome.
There it is. I got that muffin at CVS.
Dude, how old is...
That would be awesome because I'm not in studio right now, so...
How old is this muffin?
I literally bought it today. That's a very moist muffin.
Okay.
I enjoy that, all right?
Thank you. I actually appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you, thank you.
23 years old, Ronnie.
Oh, just awesome. Just getting started.
Do you have any wishes, birthday wishes?
Birthday wishes to grow this channel.
There we go. Take it to the top. We have a lot planned for you. Boxing Combine coming out next month. Next week, we're taking off for Christmas. Hope everyone has a great holiday. We're back the following week for our year-end award show. It's going to be a doozy. We have so many categories. Been a wild year of boxing. We'll cover it all. Chris, any final words?
Pour some water on your balls.
Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up. Stay out of those DMs.